Hey, AfterBuzzers. If you didn't know, it's Kevin Undergaro, the executive producer of AfterBuzz, along with my partner, Maria Menounos.
Hi, everybody.
And Maria and I, as you know, have put so much time and money into the AfterBuzz TV product and really haven't seen a lot in return.
Nope, not yet.
But one of the ways you guys can actually help us is by tuning into our new reality show, Chasing Maria Menounos. It premieres Tuesday, March 18th, 10 o'clock, 9 p.m. Central, and features me and Maria basically bickering, fighting.
No.
No?
No, it's not just bickering and fighting. You get an inside look into my life, behind the scenes.
You'll also get a behind the scenes look at AfterBuzz.
It's really funny. It's not just bickering, and it's not fake either. So that's actually something
to
think about.
It's definitely not fake. It's definitely not fake. But please tune in to Chasing Maria Menounos on Oxygen, Tuesday, March 18th at 10 p.m. All of your support will help AfterBuzz because Maria certainly won't.
So rude.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, AfterBuzzers. We are here in the AfterBuzz TV studio doing the recap for House of Cards Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 17. So we are going to get right into this episode, and the butchery definitely continues. So we are going to do our best to dissect everything. I am your host, Sophia Stanley, all by myself in the studio, but fortunately I am also joined in the engineering booth with
by me. Hey, good to see you guys again. I'm back from last week. You know, it's Stephen Lemieux. Hey.
So Stephen and I are going to do our best to dissect, maybe butcher a little bit this episode, and really kind of just go through what Frank, Claire, Lucas, and all of the other characters in House of Cards have been, you know, what they have going on this episode. And we're going to start kind of where we left off with the entitlement bill. Frank is trying to make sure that he has the votes, and he is back in Jackie's office. And it's a little bit confusing on who really the majority whip is, if Frank has actually let go of his throne and really released the reins to Jackie, or if Jackie is now the true House Majority Whip. Do you have any thoughts on that, Stephen?
I'm just reading up on this episode real quick.
Okay, all right. Well, then, as some of you know from my other AfterBuzz shows, I am not adverse to talking. So for me, the best part of this episode was really the dynamic, not only between Frank and Jackie, but Frank, Jackie, and Remy. Remy is reintroduced this episode, and it seems as if him and Frank go back to their normal banter. Frank recites a line, Remy finishes it, and, you know, Frank is like, ooh, you know you're Churchill, and basically Remy's like, yeah, that was the quote you put on the watch that you got me. And Frank, in a very condescending way, makes sure that he reminds Remy that he doesn't pick out the gifts. It's really Nancy who does that, and so it was really not an emotional gift, even though he gave it to him when he went, you know, on to leave working with Frank. And then we, you know, go directly into Frank and Jackie talking about who basically they already have for the votes. And you really see a certain aspect of Jackie, specifically when Frank asked her, you know, if he can basically utilize her office, you know, to continue to garner more votes. And she basically says, I serve, you know, at the pleasure of the vice president. I feel like she was being a little bit condescending in so much as she's basically saying, you know, given the nature of your position, I have no choice but to listen to you or to take your direction. But at the same time, she's kind of being a little snarky and sarcastic in so much as saying, I have my own viewpoints and I have my own ways of doing things, as she then shows throughout the course of the episode. Stephen, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to keep going then.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you know, basically, Frank then basically decides that he is actually going to be the one to talk to Donald Blythe. And if you guys recall, Donald Blythe was the congressman during season one who was in charge of the education bill. Education reform was, in essence, his baby. And Frank, as Frank does, basically manipulated the situation. And Donald then, you know, kind of got away from it. And then we're going to have Thaddeus join in, jump right in. And I recall when I realized that he was going to talk to Donald, you know, Jackie basically mentioned if that's a good use of his time. And I realized I actually thought that may not be a good use of his time because the way that things ended, you could see that Donald would possibly be extremely angry with Frank and would have no incentive and or motivation to potentially side with him. And if anything, would want to side against him, even if it was purely out of spite. We're just talking about Donald Blythe and the beginning of Frank kind of whipping up the votes and whether or not Frank is really a vice president, whether or not he's really the majority whip, and kind of how he's going about getting votes, but specifically from Donald Blythe.
Yeah, Frank is he actually manipulated that whole situation in season one, and we can see it's coming back to bite him in the butt. And obviously, you probably said it already, but he's fundamentally deceptive, as Donald Blythe said. It's just really funny how they got stuck in the room together. And he's like the polar opposite of Frank. So the fact that they got stuck in this room, it actually helped him see that Frank is, he will use any, it only validates his perception or his breakdown of Frank.
No, that's true.
Because he tried to use the Alzheimer's situation with his wife in order to manipulate the vote still. And he caught on to it. He's totally not falling for the okey-doke.
But at the same time, he saw a side of Frank that I don't think a lot of people have with Claire. And that there is similarities, even though, you know, both of them obviously care for their wives a lot. And it showed him that, you know, unlike his wife, Claire is really strong. And it opened up a lot of, you know, even though he's not going to take the vote in Frank's favor, it made him have more respect just because of now what Frank is going through. You can't compare Alzheimer's, obviously, to what Claire went through, but in some way, it made Frank more human to him because Frank has problems too.
I completely agree. And ironically, Thaddeus, it's something that you've brought up in other of our shows regarding House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes I am actually conflicted in the standpoint that simply because Frank and Claire are pragmatic in an emotional situation, does that necessarily make them wrong? So, for instance, I actually think that Frank was genuinely concerned about Donald's wife, Marjorie. I think that when he, you know, put his hand on his shoulder, when he, you know, made a drink, I think he was really kind of, you know, speak to him husband to husband. I have no idea what I would do without Claire. The difference is that that doesn't stop him. He then still thinks, okay, well, cool. I still have an end goal. And should we actually fault him for that? In the same point that he's a congressperson.
Right.
Shouldn't a congressperson really, if they have an end goal, within a certain frame of reason, be willing to do anything? Especially given the fact that most people by nature are self-interested. People normally get involved with charities. Why? Because someone they know was affected, right? Think about it. I don't mean to be mean, but normally,
you're forgetting the tax exemptions until, you know, probably take their money in another way. But
even still, though, think about it, though. Honestly, and this is going to be a not popular thing to say. Think about it. You have certain people who have never been involved with a charity, and I'm talking about average, ordinary people.
Right.
Then you have someone in your family pass away or deal with a certain sickness. Now, all of a sudden, you're the spokesperson for that charity.
Right.
Why? Because now you're personally affected.
It's so funny that you bring this up because I was just thinking about this the other day, and it was some celebrity. I can't remember who it was, but they were, you know, advocating for some illness or a disease or whatever, and it's not bad to advocate for anything,
no.
You know, especially something that, you know, is a cause or whatever. But why do we as people wait to advocate for something that is needed by the population until it only affects us personally? That says a lot about our society and says a lot about who we are as people. Not, you know, like I'm saying, it's not a bad thing, but why wait? you know, everybody should have a cause that affects people because we're all sharing the same space here on this rock. So why not pick up a cause somewhere, whether it affects you personally or not? And the funny thing that you mentioned about Frank right now is that he actually did. He did one of his break the fourth wall things and moments. And he asked the, you know, he talked to the audience and he said, why didn't I think about this sooner?
Yeah, why didn't I go with the heart instead of the mind?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he leans on, you see his body language? He leans on the desk and puts his hand on his face. And then he starts talking to Donald, trying to loosen his body language to a more empathetic posture to try to, you know, manipulate that. But this guy, Donald Blythe, is so, like, goody-goody. He's such a goody-goody, and that's what got him. That's what got him.
But I'm going to actually go ahead, Emma.
I was going to say, I think he still has a lot of anger from the education bill that he's carrying on because he voluntarily dropped out. So now it's like, no, there's no backing down. No matter if, you know, he probably gave him a cure for his wife, he would still stick to his guns and say, no, not happening.
Well, here's the thing. I think as a politician, anybody who has half of a brain can see and know that Frank is capable of doing what Frank.
Right.
You know, it's Frank getting to the vice presidency was not an accident.
Right.
You know, I think any of them can see that. And he can probably see, although he was giving it up, giving up the education bill. He really wasn't giving up the education bill. He needed somebody else to be an advocate for it that had somewhat power because he was dealing with his wife in that situation. Frank completely used that situation or used the education bill to his political advantage. And it worked against what Donald was actually wanted in the big picture.
No, that's a very good point. And how do you think, though, the difference between how Frank handled the situation, specifically with Blythe and the bill, contrasts and or is similar to how Jackie handled basically doing the exact same thing?
Well, they're complete opposites. Right now, you know, with Frank coming in the picture again, and as Jackie mentioned, really is it someone you want to take, and it's a waste of your time, basically. I think it could work better if Jackie handles it because she's going about it in a different way. So like we talked about with the journalism, we have old school and new school. So Jackie is bringing the new school and she's doing things completely different than how Frank did it. You know, there's obviously that respect. She's young, she's a female, and she's not taking bribery or she's not throwing out bribes to people for them to, you know, to get their votes. And it's different for people to adjust to her, but I think they would have more respect for her than they would for Frank. And they would do it out of respect, not because they're forced to do it.
Well, the thing with Jackie is that Jackie has to excuse the expression. She has to kick some people in the balls. She has to, because she knows that she's a female. She knows how these guys in this good old club, she took advice from Remy, right? She was dealing with Remy. And Remy was helping her out as far as the whipping some votes.
Right.
And she can't go about it the same way as Frank. Frank is a Southern boy who really has a whole different kind of demeanor. And I think Frank actually used Jackie to take that position because Jackie can be hard as Jackie and be her as her, not to be a Frank Underwood. Frank Underwood is Frank Underwood. I think he wanted her to take that position because of who she can be as she is.
Oh, so you think that he strategically actually expected her not to be like him?
I think he expected her to be like, to have the same, to produce the same results.
Okay.
But go about it in a different way. Ultimately, he wanted somebody in his pocket that could whip votes and get the results that he needed when he needed it. So now that he's a VP, he's not in Congress. He's not whipping votes, right?
Right.
So he needs somebody in his pocket that can go do that when he says, look, I need this. I need you to do this. I need you to blah, blah, blah. But he needs somebody who he knows can be effective doing it.
Do you think, though,
but she doesn't need to be Frank. That's the thing. She doesn't need to be Frank. She just needs to produce the results that Frank could produce.
I agree with you in theory, not in practice. And the reason being is it's not a coincidence that Frank still has a desk in her office. It's not a coincidence that Frank held the meeting with Donald
right.
in his old office.
Right.
It's not a coincidence that he brought Remy on board,
right.
sent Remy with her.
Right.
I think that she is a lot more capable than he is giving her credit. But I actually think that Frank thinks he has laid out a way.
He has 1 foot in and 1 foot.
And yes, yeah, and not right. only that, I think he is so confident in how he was the majority whip and kind of the outline or the plan of attack that he's laid out that all she has to do is follow a plan. He
right.
can't, I don't even think he could fathom that there's another way to go about it. So for me, you know, the last scene where she was basically trying to garner votes and Remy was like, oh, you know, I helped you before. Maybe you should listen to me. Like, they need, like, you know, they need a little bribe. Like,
right.
they don't need to be kicked in the shin.
Right.
And she basically starts to go down that road. And then she kicks them in the shins even harder
right.
because they softened up. They're like, oh, I'm going to get what I want.
Right.
Which basically, she calls them on the fact that they actually have no morality. They're talking about how, oh, this is against what the party wants. No, it's against you want something
right.
selfishly.
Right.
And the minute I called you on that, then you have to face the fact that you were being selfish.
Right.
And I'm telling you, that's not how I play this game.
Right.
I only reward people for good actions. This is what you're going to do. Thanks for your vote. Bye-bye.
Right.
So,
I love how she told him. I love how she told him. She said, what did she say? One of the guys... something tastes like piss. And
basically, he was like,
that
yeah,
was
she
winery.
Wanted a winery in Long Island.
Right,
and she was
right.
like, oh, I've tasted your wine.
It tastes like
piss. The
right.
same type of piss that should go in your sanitation facilities.
Right.
That
right.
was great.
Right. and I love that because that really, she empowered herself and really took the situation into her own hands and said, look, I can take your advice and I can decipher for myself whether or not it's effective for this particular situation or not. You know, and that also says that she's not going to be controlled. You know, Remy brought her into the office, just like you just said, in order for him to like, okay, Remy worked with him for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
We know their history. He knows he's going to get out of Remy. He knows mm-hmm. that if I put Remy there, that I have somebody who's going to monitor this situation and make sure that everything goes how it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wasn't going to run for whip, right, for like another 8 to 10 years
yeah.
or something
mm-hmm.
like that, or take a position or look to take a step up. So he's got these fail safes there mm-hmm. for him to make sure of the situation. But she's taking a little bit of control on her own. Jackie, I'm impressed.
Yeah, and how did you guys like how she actually handled the fact that, you know, after, and we'll talk a little bit more about the anthrax scare when we talk about Claire.
Yeah.
But how do you like how she or dislike how she handled basically once the evacuation for the Capitol, you know, was lifted and basically her and Frank speak and they're still down 4 votes and
right.
they realize that the only way potentially to get the vote is to get some of the votes from Donald because Donald holds 20 votes.
Right.
How do you feel that she handled that situation in terms of how she interacted with Donald and basically in essence how she was able to get those votes?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Frank paved the way for her to be able to do that. If Frank didn't spend that amount of time in the same room with Donald, I don't think he would have even been open to the idea where she's like, it doesn't have to be you. It could be four, you know, any of your four people.
Yeah.
Anyone just to vote. So if Frank didn't do that, she wouldn't have been able to persuade Donald at all.
That's a really good point, Emma.
So
I like how she just bogarted in the office and push all the paperwork in there and said, these are the names of the people who are going to be losing this, and these are the people who are going to be losing that.
I was just going to say that, you know, she comes from military background, so she's always in attack and battle mode.
Yeah.
Even though Frank is too, but the only difference between them is that Frank cannot apologize and Frank can never be wrong. And sometimes that is, it does hurt you. So for her to be able to recognize what her strengths are and what her weaknesses are and use it to her advantage, that's going to be very important.
No, I completely agree. And I think that the differences between Jackie and Frank, especially in this example, is Frank goes after people's self-interest personally, right? And that's what you try to do with Donald. But Donald has a higher moral code. He's looking out for the self-interest of a larger group of people, i.e., his constituents and the American people.
Right.
So I think that's what Jackie did. By Jackie basically literally and figuratively showing him the names of people that would lose welfare benefits, home care benefits, post-combat counseling, student loans. Like, she went on and on and on.
She rattled off a list.
For him, then, it took it outside of himself because, as he said, regardless of whether or not they funded Alzheimer's, he wasn't going to vote for it, which basically said he was not looking only at himself. He was looking at the larger picture. And I think that's exactly what Jackie presented to him.
Right.
Jackie is basically saying, if you are here to do your job in the way that we think government should be doing it for all of us, I will reward you for that. But if you are selfish and you are greedy, that's no good.
Right.
I'm kind of like, it's one of those gray area type of situations
with this Donald Blythe, this vote. It kind of can go either way. I mean, there's so many good arguments on both sides. So it's not so black or white with this particular this particular scenario as they tend to be on this show. Like, everything else, you know, tends to be pretty deceptive or evil on one side and pretty good on another side. But there are some good arguments as far as this one particular situation is concerned.
I don't know. I was just going to say, I don't know if it's going to, something's going to come between Jackie and Frank, because he's used to offering bribery to get what he wants, and she's now completely taking a different twist to how things are going to be done and how she's going to be collecting these votes. So are they going to go head to head? You know, are people going to be complaining to Frank? What's going to happen? And I haven't seen the rest of the season, so I can't, you know, most people are probably already have, and they're looking at me and saying, you know, are you an idiot or something? But I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just saying, I think there's going to be conflict between the two of them, and Jackie is definitely going to step out of her box and start exploring more without Frank. And that's going to piss him off.
Oh, I think she's going to do some exploring, all right.
I think Emma's point is such a great point. And ironically, even though I actually have seen the entire season and you have not.
Yeah.
However, last year I did it episode by episode. However, when I went back and basically ran a marathon, which is so amazing that we're able to do because it's on Netflix and all of, 13 episodes are available at once, I still saw different things. Mm-hmm. So regardless of the fact that when I was watching season one for the second time, I already knew the outcome, I still posed different questions. I still went down different paths. And I think the reason being is this show is so cerebral and so intelligent without being forced that you actually don't know where you're going. So to me, the end of season two isn't the end.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? In the same way that the end of season one wasn't the end.
Right.
So you may make a comment or a prediction or ask a question which may or may not be answered by the end of season two, but it may come up in season three. And that's primarily why, as you guys notice, we refer back to season one so much.
And it's only 13 episodes, so it's not like it's 26 episodes and they have unrelated storylines. And you know, as a lot of shows, they just have the consistent storylines, and they have the unrelated storylines per episode. This show is totally not like that. So the fact that it's continuous, it's like one long scenario. It's like reading a book. Chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. I mean, they continued this season. We're on the fourth episode now, and it's chapter 17.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they just continued. It's continuing the same story. So it's just keeping you in line with this is one complete journey that's going on. And everything still exists in this world. Nothing has broken. And because look at the Russo situation. The Russo situation, he still is having to bottle up this situation and cover his tracks with that. That was all from season one.
Exactly.
Most shows don't do that. So that's very impressive.
Exactly. But on iTunes, tell us how you watch. Like I said, I have watched the entire season. I could not wait. I did it in about 2 days. I just couldn't. I had to get to the end. But tell us how you've been watching, and you can do that by going to iTunes.com and you just click in AfterBuzz TV, House of Cards, and all of our podcasts will come up. And what's really amazing is not only can you rate, comment, and subscribe, but commenting allows you to join the conversation and to join the dialogue. So you can tell us whether or not you binged and you watched the entire season, or whether or not you're watching episode by episode, or you do a couple and then you stop and then you savor it and then you binge. So let us know by going to iTunes.com, AfterBuzz TV, House of Cards, and you can rate, comment, and subscribe. And please subscribe and rate 5 stars if you like what we're saying. And if you don't like what we're saying, comment and tell us what you would like us to be talking about. That's how you join the conversation. So you can talk to me, Emma, Thaddeus, and Steven by going to iTunes.com.
Yes, and don't forget, you guys, if you guys have any comments, want to put your 2 cents in, you guys can give us a call here, 424-256-1729, 424-256-1729.
And one more time, because they told me on Twitter that you said it too fast this time.
Oh, really?
So do it really slow for us.
If you guys want to call in and give us your 2 cents, join the conversation here with Emma, myself, Sophia, and Steven. You can call us here at 424-256-1729. Once again, that's 424-256-1729.
We are moving on. Claire Underwood.
Oh my God.
Fast becoming one of the most intriguing, polarizing, dynamic, diabolical characters that I have ever seen on television.
Okay, can I say something? I love how the writers threw this anthrax scare in there and had Frank stuck. Frank is not the submissive type whatsoever, and he was in a position of vulnerability. He cannot be there. He was actually slave to the system, the protocol, whatever it was. He cannot get away. He had to stay there, and he cannot be with his wife. He said, I have to be on the floor with the vote. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing we can do. You're pretty much stuck here. Frank is not used to taking orders. Frank is used to power and suggestions.
He was able to get his way on one thing, the phone conversation they were having with the walkie-talkies and being able to talk to their wives. It showed Donald that, you know, as the vice president, I could still get what I want and, you know, I still have a say. So even though it was more of a subliminal message to Donald that you should vote my way because I'm the vice president and I could get things done, but at the same time, it was to the system that I don't care what you do and how you do it, I need a phone, I need to talk to my wife.
That's an excellent point.
And I think also there was symbolism with the conversations, just the tone of the conversations. If you look at the conversation that Frank has with his wife, who's Claire, we all know how incredibly empowered Claire is, and that's a representation of Frank. And then when Donald spoke to his wife and she is struck with this horrible disease and she's dealing with it and it's like, you know, debilitating for her. And by the end of the conversation, she didn't even know who put her on the phone. She didn't even know who she was talking to. And it was kind of analogous to the situation what was going on with Donald and Frank in the room.
That's an excellent point.
Because if you, it kind of just brought out, like, if you're married to someone, that person is like the reflection of you. That's like the other you. Right? So just, it's like having a conscious. It's like, I don't know if you remember this movie. What was that movie with the guy who played James Bond? And then there was the people who had spirits, and the spirits were animals that used to walk next to them. That was their true self.
Oh, and with Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
And the little girl. Oh my God. I can't remember what it's called. Oh my goodness. They're called demons.
Right. But them speaking to their wives was kind of like that.
A reflection
of what they're actually dealing with. And, you know, when they got off the phone, you saw them holding the walkie-talkie. You saw when they got off the phone how the tone of relatable power in the room.
But
it was like this. Go ahead.
One thing also is the amount of time it took for each one of them to communicate with their wives. Frank, after Donald gets off the walkie-talkie, or off the phone the first time, Frank said, kind of like it took that long. Like you guys kind of like had a long conversation. So, and him and, you know, Claire were just on and off. You know, they said what they needed to say. They were on the same page.
They've been in quarantine before. How many times have you been in quarantine? Several times. Okay.
Yeah.
And they were off.
He said, maybe if I die here, then I wouldn't have to see this, see us not lose this vote. Yeah. You know, so.
But do you think that's part of the reason? Because that's an excellent point. I never thought about that in terms of the analogy between Donald and his wife and Claire and Frank, basically, in essence, that your spouse is a reflection of you.
Yeah.
Do you think that's why Frank felt comfortable with Claire doing the interview alone when it was, in essence, supposed to be their first public interview as vice president and what do they call the first lady vice president?
Second lady?
Okay. No, I mean, really, I'm not trying to be funny. Yeah. So, but it's supposed to be their first interview since Frank became vice president. Do you think that's why he felt comfortable with her doing it by herself? Because she, in essence, is a reflection of him.
But I think he realized it a couple of episodes ago when he made, he mentioned a quote, and I'm going to find it and quote him, but he said how Claire had become this person that he didn't even know who she was anymore. So he's realized it already, but now it's just seeing her in action and realizing that he doesn't need to be next to her 24/7 or to hold her hand. And she's going to, if she needs to get something done, he's been a great mentor. I think he thinks he's been a great mentor, but I think it's the other way around, that she could do it herself.
Okay.
Which is why, you know, when he comes to the house, he doesn't step in.
No, that's true. That's true.
He lets her. He lets her continue. I mean, it's evident that Claire is a force to be reckoned with, and like in the interview, she comes from wealth. You know, she says yes,
but she says we're comfortable.
We're comfortable. We were comfortable, and she downplays it. But you know, the reporter's pretty much kind of hitting it on the head. Okay, you come from a wealthy family, and she's probably grown up, seen some things, and experienced some things. From people in that that percent of society or the world. So I think she's probably has been privy in her life to experience certain things. Like, remember, Frank didn't come from an affluent background, and they brought that up, that Frank's – or that Claire's father actually contributed to.
Was that surprising to either one of you? The fact that potentially – there is a semblance of their union that could have actually been more strategic than even we thought. So, for instance, we had originally thought that their relationship was strategic in the fact that they both valued each other's intelligence and the fact that their lives would never be boring and that they both had this similar a similar pursuit of power, but not necessarily that Claire had money and that Frank possibly chose her because she and her family could fund his campaign.
I didn't think about it, but when they did mention it, it didn't shock me. Okay. I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that, because even nowadays in today's world, there's a lot of, you know, political families that join union just because they know where they're going and what they need to get there and how they could help one another.
But here's the thing. The family of that nature would never usually consent with somebody of lesser status to marry in or whatever or whatnot. I think Frank has had this ultimate plan, this power plan, right? And he was probably, I don't know, the funds that the father gave him to support which campaign, what he was running for before he even got to Congress or if it was for Congress or whatever. But Frank, you can see he was hungry. He's hungry, and he probably saw her and was like, that's the kind of woman I need that's going to look good for my campaign, that knows how to handle situations, knows how to talk, knows how to rub shoulders in that circle that I'm going to be in because I'm going to make sure that I get there. Frank knows what he's capable of, and he's been pulling it off.
But you also have to remember that the Claire we see now is not the Claire that she used to be. As she mentioned, she had 3 abortions, which 2 of them was, you know, when she was a teenager and she was reckless. So I'm sure we don't know what happened back then, but maybe her family, you know, was happy to give her away to just have her settle down. I don't know.
Oh, that's a
nice
point.
And the fact that we've seen in prior seasons how her mom just wanted her to be pretty and, you know, have this smile on her face. So we don't know how her family saw things and, you know, what she was going through with them. And if she had to choose in the pictures what she wanted, the kid that was with the horse in the picture or the one that was going to prep school, she chose the kid because, you know, she was free-spirited and she wasn't so controlled. And
I agree with you, but I think what was really telling is she said, I prefer the dirt.
Yes.
Right.
So when Ashley, the interviewer, asked, which do you prefer, basically the prep school girl or the little girl at the ranch, she said, no, this is home. I prefer to be in the dirt. And I think that's very telling. And and I think that speaks to, and I really want to just, you know, as quickly, you know, but as detailed as we can, really dissect the interview.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, there was a moment, I think, when Ashley asked her, you know, how her childhood was, and she said it was great, even though I'm not sure if I believed her,
no.
Kind of, you know, going to the point that Emma made. But I think there was a moment when she was talking about Kennedy, which even though as the audience, we know her and I was thinking, she's so strategic, right? Of course you're going to bring up. Right. Once they basically mention that you're really wealthy and this is maybe a marriage of convenience or strategy, that you being from Texas are going to bring up a childhood memory as it relates to the assassination of one of the most popular, prominent and well-respected presidents that we have ever had. You think, oh, she's won. Like, she's won over America, even though we know it's strategic.
Right.
There's that moment, and even Connor looks in the monitor, and I think the young lady's name is Emma, the other young lady. He's like, I have this. He's like, we're going to go all the way.
Right.
And then the interview shifts, and, you know, the conversation about why they haven't had kids. She gives the normal answer she always gives, and Ashley is not having it and probes her a little bit more.
Right. She stuck her with the probe pretty tough, though.
I just have one question for you guys and also our viewers. When they brought the picture out and compared it, the girl in the dirt, when she said she prefers the dirt, do you think that resembles her and the free spirit that she has with... oh my God, the painter.
Adam.
Oh, you know, and the prep school is more...
the controlled.
I actually think it's the exact opposite. I actually think it's the exact opposite. And this is why. Do you remember how even when she was in bed with Adam, season one, basically when she, you know, leaves for a couple of days and they're talking in bed and she's talking about her mom and how her mom always wanted her to be happy. She says something to the effect of, Frank always saw me. Frank never wanted me to be that. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, going to their former Capitol Police. I can't remember the guy's name. But remember when he was, you know, in the hospital bed, she kind of says the same thing.
Right.
She goes, she basically is trying to say to him, you don't love me. You love the outer exterior of the fact that I happen to be an extremely beautiful, well put together woman.
Right.
But you actually don't see the dirt. All you see is the beauty. And I think that by doing what she did, which in essence, like, you can argue was a somewhat form of assault, given the fact that he was literally incapable of stopping her. I'm stretching it.
I'm sure he liked it.
Anyways. But, I mean, she physically... I'm trying to figure out how far I can go with it. Anyways, everyone's seen what happened in season one.
She copped a feel.
Right.
Right.
So, but she did it to demean him. And, I think, to show him, you don't see me. So, for a split second, I'm going to let you see, potentially, how grimy and dirty I really am.
Right.
I think... And then... I feel like even going back to Adam, when Adam took the picture of her, she basically was like, oh, that's not who I am. And if I am, that's who I was. That picture when he took of the woman on the bench, he's like, oh, that's how I see you. She's basically like, oh, but that's not how I see myself. And I think that going back to what Thaddeus said and the fact that Claire and Frank and or any spouse marital relationship, if they're a mirror of one another, I think that the thing that Frank and Claire do extremely well is they really, really see each other and they know each other.
Right.
And so I really think it's more symbolic of the dirt. That's what they are. Like, she's rough and tumble. She's not really this perfect person. It's only an exterior, but the real person that she is, she has the freedom to do whatever she wants.
Well, let's talk about how she spun this whole interview and this whole termination of the pregnancy story. After she went out and Connor was like, no, you can't go back out there. She was like, excuse me. And I was even like, oh, dang. Like, wow. Like, Claire she's been stumped kind of sort of at this interview. Like, she looks like she's losing her grasp on the situation. So she's like, excuse me. She takes a break, goes in the kitchen. Connor's like, what's going on about the abortion? And she's like, I had 3 abortions. And he's like, what? You're definitely not telling him that. You're definitely not telling me you had 3 abortions. She's like, well, you can see her go outside of herself, leave the space that she was in with him, and go into, like, I'm talking to Frank mode.
Yeah.
Like, and then she completely shut him off.
Yeah.
And then she just walks back in.
Yeah.
After he didn't want her to go back out.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, can I just cut you off real sec? That was a brilliant move.
Yes.
There was absolutely no way she could have said what she said in the manner in which she said it. Because she basically stated, you know, my husband, if I answer this question, basically she's saying before she answered it truthfully, my husband's political career could be in jeopardy.
Yes.
My faith will be brought into question and my life will be threatened.
Yes.
And then she basically says, yes, I had an abortion.
Well, she wanted to cover her bases, you know, just in case something happens. She's putting it out there, you know, on national television that this is what will happen. But I'm going to go ahead and say it anyways.
No, that's an excellent point.
Right. And so basically she's...
So she knew strategically what she was saying. And now if this guy, who she's blaming, comes after her, it's like, well, you know, I said it on national television that my life can be threatened. So...
I never took it that way the first time. That's an excellent.
You know, it's
point.
Having something in writing.
They got secret service.
It's letting the you know, the majority or people viewing know how she's feeling. You know, there's law. I'm not going to say it, but cover your ass, basically.
Yeah.
So if you don't have it in writing, if it's not anywhere that people heard it, or it's not proven, then it didn't happen.
So were you guys surprised and shocked that not only that when she came back that she basically stated that she had been assaulted and then named the person, and the way that she basically was like, oh yeah, I saw him at a, you know, pinning ceremony. Yeah, we spoke. My husband pinned stars on
him. He just commissioned.
And then named him.
which took her back to how it could affect her husband's career, and it could put life threats on you because they know the person. And it puts them on a pedestal because even though this happened to her and she's never told anyone, they're able to still carry out their duty to, you know, their, you know, to the people.
He had just received a commendation from the vice president, which is her husband. I mean, that there's a lot going on. It's like
it's not going to stop them from doing the greater good and to helping people out.
And again, I'll be honest with you. In that moment, I think I screamed as if I was watching soccer and it was a goal. Like,
right.
No, seriously. Like, I was like, yes! Because I was like, I can't believe that you know, General McGinnis had the odd. I mean, I would want to be like, curse, beep, 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 beep.
Right.
But not only that you knew you assaulted her, because obviously, and I think it was extremely necessary in the previous episode for her to describe to Frank how it happened.
Right.
That was really for us as the audience
right.
to know that there was absolutely no question, no doubt that an assault took place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, that he would have the nerve to speak to her and then
and
to
greet her and give her a kiss.
And to tell everyone that they dated.
Right.
That basically in of itself was another assault. And
yeah.
to me, the fact that she had that conversation with Frank, like, oh no, we're going to channel this energy. Like, there's no point in just throwing things around.
Right.
That's what she did in a manner that I think that Frank, watching as it turned the corner and she named him, has a completely newfound respect, love, admiration for her, because she, to me, is the ultimate strategist or tactician. Because she wielded the sword in a way that I could have never seen coming. Go ahead,
right,
Thaddeus.
Right. Watching that situation was the first time this season I said, oh, what? Like, since Frank threw Zoe in front of the
train.
That was the first time that I had, like, had that reaction.
Yeah.
Because it just, it did wield that much power. The fact that she actually, she mentioned, I was like, okay, she mentioned it. But then she said his name. She straight outed him, like, on national TV and this. So, basically, that whole situation was like a wave. It was like a tidal wave coming her way. And then she just completely threw the dam up and just swayed the waters to float another way. Now she's got all the support. First, it looks like she's not having any support based on the fact that she had made terminated a pregnancy and she said it's going to jeopardize this and death threats and blah, blah, blah. People were like, you know, question her faith. But now everybody's going to support her. And then fast forward.
So she takes a break, which is, again, very strategic because she basically is trying to buy a little bit of time to figure out her next move.
Right.
You know, she's talking to Connor. Connor basically, she says, I hate lying, which I think is telling. Because on some levels, they are very straightforward in a certain standpoint. Connor basically asked, did the assault actually happen? She said yes. And he basically is like, then it's not lying. Then it's good for a good cause.
Right.
And then basically Emma comes in, says that there's a phone call, a young lady who has been assaulted by the general. Claire basically talks to her. It's basically because they cannot use the person's name or put her on air without saying her name, because then it just seems contrived.
Right.
Claire speaks to her, basically gets her to say her name, and the remaining 20 minutes of the interview is Claire now interviewing the young lady.
Right.
Were you guys amazed? Were you guys in awe? How did you guys feel about how Claire...
Because she took the energy away from her and put it on this girl who now she's a victim. It's not Claire anymore. And she's the one that's guiding and counseling her and trying to help her. So she's, you know, it just, people are going to view her differently. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, why didn't you use this with the pregnancy case? Or she just has so many great ideas that she never let out. I don't know if maybe she just didn't have to or she was depending on Frank. But she's brilliant, and I'm starting to realize that I don't know if it's going to be her running for president or it's going
to be Frank. I think that's a great point.
You're funny.
No, I think it's a great point. But we, because of time, are going to have to leave it there. I think that is an excellent point. Claire, for president, let us know
what do you think? When that happened and Frank was looking at her on the screen, I saw a moment of... I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but fear is you know, when you're on a, say, for example, let's use football as an example, right? And you have this guy on your team who knocks the snot out of everybody, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad he's on my team because he's not going to knock the snot out of you. I felt like that kind of moment.
I agree.
He looked at her like in awe, amazement, admiration, everything. How she spun that whole thing, brought it around. I think he's like, I don't know. Maybe she's my mentor now. I totally agree.
But yeah, we will continue the conversation, and we probably will carry this conversation on the next episode, the next chapter. But where can everyone find you guys?
You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at RealEmmaKay, and also GQJedi.com.
You can find me at GQJedi.com and Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus.
And you can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley. Thank you for joining us, AfterBuzz TV, House of Cards. Join us right here. In 5 minutes, or on iTunes or YouTube, whenever you want to watch. Thank you, After Buzzers.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.